Welcome back to Fantasy Pixels. I'm your host, Robert Moda. This is part two of our two-part episode review of Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace, with Mark Kurtman, Zach Book, and myself. Here we go. And we're back.
All right, so guys, C-3PO, what did we think about C-3PO's intro? I know to me it didn't work, and I was talking to Zach about that the way they did him was they wanted Anthony Daniels to be, so you know how Anthony Daniels was the actual, you know, C-3PO, and he had his mannerisms and the way he acted, but also the fact they wanted him to translate that to a puppet that he was carrying in front of him, and that didn't work well because when you see him walking and stuff, he looks like he's disabled.
Well, I mean, he kind of is.
Yeah.
But, all right, so my hot take on the C-3PO thing is that C-3PO, and I don't know if this is, I haven't read about this, right? But there are a number of silver C-3PO clone looking things that exist in the Star Wars universe that existed before and after.
Oh, there's a whole bunch of different colors. We're talking about black, white, there's silver, gold, there's
right. The protocol droid, like the humanoid looking protocol droid archetype, is something that exists well outside of this. And in fact, we see one at the beginning of the Phantom Menace on the Trade Federation cruiser. And during that, this protocol droid is walking the Jedi Knights, Qui-Gon Jinn, and his apprentice, Obi-Wan, around. And so my quick hot take is, like, is this, like, did Anakin make C-3PO as, like, a kit droid? Like, was this, like, me going to the store and buying, like, a bag of, like, Lego, like, electronic, like Technics or whatever they call those, like motorized
or
Lego
build
parts.
A bear.
Yeah, like is this
a
like,
build a bear?
Is this like a model droid like kit, or is this like an example of the heist that he's doing for all these pod race parts? Like, is this just like him stealing droid parts and going, oh, I bet this will work, and like making his own version of a protocol droid? Like, what is that, right? And I think that from an introductory standpoint, like, we get this crazy thing for R2, and then we get C-3PO in the classic state of this comic relief is just naked on a table. So it's just kind of a weird...
My parts
it's
are
a weird
exposed.
Thing. Yeah, it's very strange, right?
Are you saying that Anakin is a thief?
I'm saying he's got to be a thief. Look at all
he's
this
gotta
stuff.
Be.
Like, he's a slave, and he's got a pod racer. It's like if he had, like, a $90,000 Toyota Supra parked in his garage. Like, what? Where did this come from? Like, he doesn't even make income, and he's got these parts for, like, this crazy, like, hot-rodded pod racer that's apparently the fastest thing on the planet, from the best I can tell.
All right, I have to explain this, too, in Raimi Universe, too. Is it, like, the Delta that we have in Evil Dead all the way up to the new Sam Raimi Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, where they have to have the Delta in every particular movie?
Well, this is more like Anakin's a slave and he gets no income because I don't think slaves
and
get
a child
income. I mean, and
he's a child and
so
a slave.
All these parts have to be coming out of Watto's shop. Is Watto that stupid that
yes,
like
he's basically
I assume that he's chopping.
Yeah,
these
he's
things.
Basically
like, he's chopping
supplied
a bunch
an
of stuff.
Entire droid and a pod racer.
Yep.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's stealing parts and doing whatever he needs to do to have his fun and create and do whatever he needs to do.
Better get off that planet and become a Jedi. Yeah. It's gonna be tough. all your toys and your mom.
It's like, oh, you have a laser sword? I would love to know how to use that.
Yeah. Very strange. And like the only aspirational thing about him being a Jedi is like, I had a dream one time that I was a Jedi. And it's like, oh, cool, you're hired. It's like, what?
Yeah, exactly right.
What in the hell?
So, and talking about Jedis and him being a Jedi, what do you guys think? Like, the one thing that definitely didn't work and has been such a huge controversy throughout the years has been the whole midichlorian thing.
Yeah. Oh.
I'm weak right now. Just thinking about you saying midichlorian, I was hunched over. I was frustrated. Like, mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell, and midichlorian is the powerhouse of the force. Like, I don't understand how that could possibly be it. And I have a bunch of like up in arms nerd reasons why. Just from like a sci-fi standpoint, it's like if the Force surrounds all living beings and the Force is everywhere, so you're telling me midichlorians are just floating around in space?
Yeah, like cancer.
It's like it's like the coronavirus. It's not even cancer. Cancer doesn't float places. It's like,
oh my god,
it's just so confusing. And it's like, and I think Rob said it best earlier when we were talking. I think that midichlorians is maybe an indicator, like, oh, like they're attracted to force sensitive beings, would have been like a better way to segue, like some sort of, hey, like we tested for midichlorians because like midichlorians occur naturally. And they gravitate towards strong beings of the Force.
Correct. So, in other words,
like that would have been more believable, easier pill to swallow. Like, not just, oh man, he's got a bunch of Force juice.
Yeah,
watch out.
And this was George Lucas' way of trying to sign, which is crazy because in a movie, and especially an entire franchise, which is not really based off of science, like Star Trek, let's say. Where they try to like really base it off more of science.
Yeah, ad nauseum in Star Trek. It's so complex.
This is more of, you know, George Lucas trying to like scientifically explain the Force. But come on, dude. So you're saying that that the midichlorians are the ones that really have the Force, and because they live inside you, that's why you have... And I just... Everybody.
It's in everybody at that point.
Yeah.
But it depends
to varying degrees.
Yeah, in varying degrees, and according to Shmi, if you look at it, like what Obi-Wan stated to Qui-Gon, saying he's off the charts, he's better than
Yoda
at this point.
By the way, that chart was like a fucking Illyrian, like some sort of flight readout on the ship. It was like some sort of weird semicircle. It's like,
yeah, exactly.
It's like,
right?
It's like he pulled up his credit score. It's like, oh man, this guy's got he's got an 800 midichlorian.
He's got great
score.
Credit for midichlorians.
Yeah.
Oh,
wow.
So that's why, it never worked. And I think that's why, and it's funny enough, you know, after this, and because of the criticism, midichlorians really did not get mentioned. In the other
after
two
that.
Movies, but not only that,
nope.
I don't think they got mentioned in the sequels.
Nope.
And in some of the other stuff, I think they briefly talked about it. I think in Mando? They briefly talked about it there, but, you know, because I think Dave Filoni is trying to find a way to
revive it.
Yeah, revive it, but also at the same time, not make it seem like, hey, this is where the Force is coming from.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
so.
There's other examples of pseudoscience too. Is like 0.5 past light speed. Like when they're describing the Millennium Falcon, it's like, what does that mean? 0.5 what? 0.5 is it 1.5 times light speed? Like is it? Oh, I did the Kessel run like in 14 parsecs
and 12 parsecs.
Right. Yeah, 12 parsecs. What the hell is a parsec? Is that a duration of time or speed?
Parsec is supposed to be a measurement of distance
and speed.
Right. So if a parsec,
time and speed.
If a parsec is distance, is the Kessel run a series of wormholes?
Well, like, they explained that in the movie Solo.
Well, yeah, and they also cover some of that in Clone Wars. And it's like, we talk a little bit about like, what wormhole jumping, like different things, but it's still one of those things where George Lucas just word vomited some space terms and was here you go, guys, sci-fi, am I right?
You go. Here's some sort of explanation, and you know, it's like
numbers.
Very much almost like, and I don't really want to upset anybody out there that is a Scientologist out there too, because that's literally what they have done within Scientology as well. So you have to go to these extremes of like sections and everything else. So, but the thing is, it's all based upon science fiction, everything else. And he's trying to create some sort of religion within it. So that way it works for the particular story.
Right.
And that's the whole point, is this is a story and they do have some sort of religion or science within it.
yeah,
that they could actually live.
I understand what you're saying, Mark, but like, so when you watch Empire, you got Yoda, and Yoda's actually describing the Force as a mystical thing that, you know, binds us and hold, you know, that vision and that thought of what the Force really is has always been this magical thing for us, has always been this
deep down,
Yeah,
it's got to roll.
Yeah, it's the magical, like, it's, oh, and then all of a sudden he tries to, you know, scientifically explain it and takes all the mysticism and romanticism of that away.
Yeah.
You know, it's 100%. Like, all right, you know what? All that shit that seemed really cool and, you know. And
it almost hurts my feelings.
Yeah.
Because, like, as a kid, like, I'm over here going, like, holding my hand up trying to move fucking water bottles. And I'm like, that never happened. And obviously it's because I don't have any mitochondria in my hands.
Midichlorians. Mitochondria you have. Midichlorians you don't. But
yeah, like, I don't have any space wizard juice in my hands. So I can't move any water bottles because space wizard juice doesn't exist.
Talking about space wizards, so Obi-Wan calling Anakin a pathetic life form. So the Jedi are supposed to be portrayed as peacekeepers and the ones, and even Anakin at some point was like, you know, in the other movies, it's like, you know, talking about how in a way they're embraced to feel love or something like that. But he calls Anakin a pathetic life form. I'm like, that's some arrogant shit.
Yeah, this guy walks off the spaceship. He's like, what is this guy, poor? And like, it's just like,
it's like, we are allowed to love, but we can't have love for somebody else that is kind of
direct
they towards coach compassion. Somebody else.
They coach compassion, but they don't talk about, like, I feel like there's a lot of stuff that the Jedi Order, whether by accident or on purpose, is just like, they're like, nah, I don't want to worry about that. Like, that's not my problem.
I have a funny feeling that's what they're trying to, like, kind of change within The Mandalorian, as well as the Book of Boba Fett at this point. And they're going to kind of rationalize and reason with. Because within the Book of Boba Fett, we actually do get to see the Jedi Temple that Luke has created. And so that's excited. Where Grogu
yeah,
is.
And it's funny because at some point, Filoni did say, listen, the Jedi were... The Jedi were a failure towards the very end. Who they were supposed to be and what they turned out to be is an epic failure, and that's why they failed, and that's why the whole order fell. I think that was part of it. It's just they got to the point where, like, that arrogance of, you know, they were better than people, and they were so indoctrinated into their beliefs and, you know, and so strict. But
very much like
the only thing that I could think
of religion.
Yeah, the only thing I could think of is that just Obi-Wan was an asshole. You know?
Yeah, Obi-Wan was
young.
A drunk asshole.
Yeah, exactly.
He liked to drink, trust me. Because we saw that when he went to Mos Eisley and even The Clone Wars. Because, where are you going, Master? I'm going to have a drink. He goes out there and he goes to have a drink. So that's all he had to do. Yeah. But
I think it's an age thing, too. I think it's just a part of Obi-Wan's journey where he was at the time, being a young Padawan and being like, oh, man, are we really going to be dicking around with these idiots? Like, not understanding the significance of what they were dealing with.
Right.
And just like, man, we've already got this crazy broad on my ship that's doing weird stuff. And, like, we got this queen. We got Jar Jar. Like, let's invite some more people on the ship. Come on. I thought we were going to go on this one negotiation mission, and I was about to be able to go home.
And we're just picking up people along, like if we were like the Wizard of Oz or something like
that. Yeah, now we're in the desert, and I got a bunch of assholes on my ship. Like, what is going on here, Qui-Gon?
So, talking about the queen, because that leads to that. So, the reveal of Padme as the queen.
Mm-hmm.
We already knew that. I mean, it's just like, it seems like
we knew that. Yeah.
I think you know, I think that, I mean, if it was me, if I was actually going to, you know, if I was George, I would have been like, all right, I am not going to reveal who the queen, or I'm not going to reveal that Padme is the queen at all.
Mm-hmm.
But we knew this already. Oh, you know, Natalie Portman as Queen Amidala, you know, we already knew that, but I would have done it as a surprise where when she does reveal it, we're like, even the audience is surprised, but you know, when she did that revealed, we were like, yeah, okay, so what? You know, it was just, I guess, a reveal for the Gungans, but it just wasn't impactful. I wish it was. You know, it just didn't feel like...
Yeah.
It was very strange, and that's where, like, with current movies, we think a little bit more further ahead, and we like, actually will cast people as, like, unknown character, or, like, cast people as, like, hey, lady number two, like... And we might have an idea of what that character is, but it gives a lot more into the mystery of, like, we sit here and we think, and we're like, oh, man, who's that character going to be? And I remember when, like, Force Awakens was a thing, we were like, wait, like, who do you think Rey's related to? Like, it was, like, this whole, like, scandal, right? We were all just so excited to think about it. And, like, with the Marvel, I think what the Marvel movies do really well, it's like, if they want to tease you with something, they do it on purpose. Like they do it,
and then they kind of take that away from you.
Yeah, and then they're like, here's this thing to chew on for the next 6 months until we announce what the movie
is. It's like, oh, what you thought was real is not real, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it's very much what, like, Keira Knightley being Padme's, like, alter ego or like, diversion.
Yeah.
And, yeah, to me, I thought that was great. But it's like, and then she comes out to the Gungans and goes, oh, this is my decoy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
She looks exactly like me. Well, and blah, 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 blah.
It comes, like, right back down again, like, a decoy for what reason? Like, why? Like, I still don't know the significance of what this queen is even here for. Like as we talked earlier.
It's all about representation, apparently.
Yeah, it's like, I'm the queen of my basement right now by that metric. It's like... It just doesn't make any sense. You know, yeah, I was elected by me. I'm here. I'm the queen.
And your dog and your cat.
Yeah. They're like, yeah, sure. Do whatever you want, dude. Yeah. Whatever. Have fun.
Anakin guessing.
There's a lot of stuff.
So Anakin guessing the flight controls. Didn't he say he was a pilot all his life?
Yeah, he's like, I have this mechanical affinity. I, like, you know, I'm building a hot rod in my backyard, but man, if I jump in a ship, I don't know what the big red button on the yoke does. Like, yeah, oh exactly. Man, where's the blaster, guys? Oh shoot, that's the windshield wipers.
Oh, this is not pod racing. Hold on, I'm flying now. Oh, this is pod racing.
Yeah. Oh, a joystick or the headlights. Oh, I don't know what button to press.
I think the funny part is, like, oh, let's see what happens when I turn the stick this way. Well, I'm not a pilot, but I figured it's going to turn. Right?
Yeah,
I got
an inkling.
Yeah,
got
I think that
idea.
Portrayal of him, oh, I've been a pilot all my life, but when you get on the pot, you know, when you get on this ship, the way he guessed at the controls was the same way as, I don't know, a person who's never been in an airplane says, I don't know what to do. Well, then don't claim you're a pilot.
And you've never even understood, like...
Yeah.
It's almost completely unreasonable because I was about to make an analogy. So, like, as a human, like, we have toys on Earth for our toddlers with steering wheels. Toddlers have toys of steering wheels because we drive cars. That's how we get around on our planet. And so, like,
exactly,
like, if I'm a kid in Star Wars, in this universe of flying in, like, all sorts of different spacecraft and speeders that hover and, like, are you telling me that I don't have a rudimentary understanding of how those machines operate?
Oh, left and right, up and down, left.
Yeah.
Especially when you just build your own fucking podcast and you just want to race.
It's completely
I mean,
unbelievable.
A pod racer, not a podcast.
Yeah, it's
if Anakin had a podcast, we'll see if it would have been successful or not. But
it's completely unbelievable.
We'll ask Jake Lloyd that later.
It's completely unbelievable.
But the funny thing, and to caveat onto that, what you said, Zach, it's pretty funny too, because I always go back and reflect to that, because he didn't know how, where everything goes with the joystick and how and the yoke and everything. Think about Independence Day. Oh, I had it upside down. With Jeff Goldblum.
Yes. It's
like,
oh man. Exactly. So, when Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon are fighting Darth Maul, there's a couple of scenes where Darth Maul hits Obi-Wan and he falls like 4 or 5 stories down to a platform. He falls and gets right back up like if nothing happened.
Okay. Yeah.
And they could jump leaps and bounds too, by the way.
Yeah.
That part I'm okay with. Right. Level. That part I'm okay with because, okay, the force, you know, helps you, but you fell on your back.
There's lack of continuity here because Obi-Wan falls 4 flights or further onto his shoulder. And like the way Jedi are supposed to like jump around, it's like all force driven. Like they force jump, they force fall. And so they can catch themselves and propel themselves. I'm cool with that. Right.
Yeah.
And like we see that throughout the films, we see that throughout the series. Like that's all cool. But like this guy fell on his shoulder and like it wasn't looking good. Like he fell in a way that if I fell in real life, I wouldn't be able to spell my name, let alone get up.
Like, I wouldn't know my name.
like, and then like the other thing is like in episode 3 in Revenge of the Sith, the guy gets smacked into a handrail at a much less dramatic angle, and he's down for the count for the entire Count Dooku fight.
Yes.
And so it's like there. It's just like a weird. It's like a weird connection there.
Different
it's like,
exposition.
Shoulder?
Right?
Yeah. Is it like his trigger shoulder? Like,
if it would have been me, I would have just been on the floor going, "Dude, you got this." Just dude, like Qui-Gon do his shit. I'm like, I'm out.
I'm 100%. I'm 100% sure.
I don't care
that my organs wouldn't work anymore if I got hit that hard. So like, I'm 100% sure I wouldn't be in any condition to move ever again.
So here's the thing: Obi-Wan beats Maul so easily.
Yeah. I if you put Muhammad Ali in my basement, I bet I could beat him up too.
Maybe when he had Parkinson's and in a wheelchair. Yeah, but
Well, that's the thing, and you know, I hate criticizing this fight because this fight is so cool.
It is,
it's such a neat thing, right? And the fact that Obi-Wan beats Maul is this good versus evil, just triumphant moment.
Right.
And if that was where it left off, we could have fucking swallowed it, right? But now Maul's back, right? And like Obi-Wan, who's this really good like Jedi, is fighting this guy, and they even made the point of separating them, right? So they separated them behind these, you know, ray shields or whatever you want to call them, and. Like we see, and I know we were talking about a couple different force things before the podcast. We actually see evidence of battle meditation, right? So like this, you know, for anyone familiar to the expanded universe Star Wars, or just some of the stuff we get to see, Jedi collect themselves. They do the opposite of what the Sith do. The Sith get really mad and they hit stuff. They seethe in their anger and they get stronger. The Jedi, they center themselves. So, like, he took the moment between these different ray shields opening and closing to sit down, shut off his lightsaber, and just zone out for a second to get his shit together.
Mm-hmm.
In that same point, we see him come back and fail. We see him get impaled and killed.
Right.
And then we just have this guy who's a Jedi. And this is one thing about Obi-Wan, is, like, we never see any other evidence of this. But he gets mad, right? He gets mad and concerned about his friend and comes by and just one hits Darth Maul. Just like, hey, dude, see ya. Like, after he just fell 40 flights. And it's just, this is a really bizarre scene. And I think that while in that, and the fact that this is a really cool duel and a really cool part of the movie, and like, out of all the things to criticize, this should be the back of our list. It is worth noticing that it's like, if Qui-Gon gave it his all and failed after this fight, like, Obi-Wan just walks in the door and knocks this guy out. Like, it was luck? Was it destiny? Was it fate?
Exactly.
Like, do we want to think about it like that?
It was a cool scene.
That's what it was.
It was a cool scene, but the thing is that, when you start thinking about it, it's like, well, first of all, the apprentice is the one that beat him. So Qui-Gon is supposed to be the master, so I guess, you know.
Yeah.
So, and then it's so funny.
Universe stuff there too.
You mentioned the ray shields. You ever seen Galaxy Quest, where they make
where
they make fun of certain things in a ship that they're just there for shits and giggles, just to, you know, but they serve no purpose whatsoever.
Who the fuck made this?
So the ray shields were exactly the same thing.
Sigourney Weaver going. So what the hell is this?
So I never thought about that like that, but like where geographically were they? So they were in this Naboo base, right?
They were in the hangar, and from that they went to like somewhere.
Okay, so they were in some weird room with some weird pit with some weird thing. And it almost looked like one of those like Bespin, like Cloud City, like big drops, right?
Yeah.
And it's weird because Naboo was terrestrial. So where the hell, so I know this wasn't our list, but where the fuck did he go? Where did he fall to?
He just fell to
outer space? Like, is there a, I'm a little concerned about the structure of this planet.
I think the Gungans actually grabbed him in the water.
Oh.
And then pieced him together.
Okay.
Put little thing there, and then he was able to get metal legs because they actually helped him out.
Yeah.
And
then, I'm not sure. I know. Okay. I think there was a clone. There was a couple of Clone War episodes that explain how he that happened.
Yes.
But yeah.
Yeah.
I think.
Yes.
So too.
And they had nothing to do with Naboo.
Yeah. So speaking about
not even remotely similar.
Speaking about Qui-Gon dying. After Qui-Gon dies, he got burnt, and so just like you know a lot of ceremonies out there, you know, especially. In medieval times where you burn one of the heroes and stuff like that, you always see
the
that
Viking
happen
ceremony
at a distance because one, the flames are so big, but two, the smoke and everything. On this one, everybody's in this really close area. Qui-Gon is burning, which should look gross by now because he should be, you know, having like skin peeled away from him.
He's,
but there's no even...
Or you could smell him.
Yeah, but there's no smoke. Yeah. There's no nothing.
What's for dinner? Yeah, well, and you wonder what's fueling that because if you look at medieval like funeral pyres, right? So where you burn people, like you're talking pallets upon pallets of logging and wood.
Exactly.
And usually there's an accelerant. There's some sort of oil or some sort of thing to use to really ignite that stuff.
Propane. I'm going like, to say this again, propane. That's what they had.
Yeah. Dude, he's got like an outdoor living like luxury fucking gas powered like fire pit table. Like, and on the other side that we didn't see, there was a bunch of guys in lawn chairs with some beers. Like, it's like this weird.
Yeah, this is great.
Yeah, like, wow, this is a fucking weird barbecue, guys. All right. Like, it just
I
very.
I like my Qui-Gon gin smell.
Yeah.
I love it.
And the other thing, too, and this is in the weeds, so I'm just going to brush on this. When Jedi are killed, they disappear.
Yeah.
All right.
Generally, hold on. They do. So, because we saw that with Obi-Wan.
No,
because...
I have ammo here. But, like,
all right,
go for it.
Go, Zach.
There's some deep woods Clone Wars episodes that go in to explain the whole manifesting yourself through the living force after death.
Okay.
In that, they've hinted to the fact that Qui-Gon didn't complete that training. And so he learned a lot of it. And like read it in a textbook, but wasn't able to complete all that, which is interesting because, and this goes into yet another one of those digital effects things we were talking about with George Lucas. When you look at Qui-Gon, he doesn't disappear on death. Bear with me for a second.
Okay.
Neither does Darth Vader. Now,
when he got killed, but in his suit, when he got burnt, you don't know if he's still in the suit.
I guess, but like, sure, I guess. We'll chew on that for a minute. But before the redone versions, Anakin shows back up. Anakin shows up as a Force ghost.
As Force ghost, as an old man, and then with the revision.
Right, as Hayden Christensen.
Hayden Christensen.
Right. Hey, whatever, man. I don't want to pick a fight there, right? But it's one of those things where it's like, it's weird that he, like, we talk about him not disappearing, but to your point, like, he's not actually burning. It's just, it's a very weird scene.
Right.
Also, with the weird thing with the new movies, too. We see the Vader's like helmet
melted
with a skull, and we see Han Solo's son Ben.
Yep.
With that, and it's got like a kind of like a skeleton in it. It's kind of a little bit strange.
Yeah.
Grandfather. So on this list, I also have. So it's funny. So what worked on the first list? I also said George Lucas works on the first list, but on this list, I also say that did not work on this movie. And it's again, while George gave us such a great universe and gave us, you know, such great stories, but at the same time, I think he was an enemy to himself.
He got in his own way with a lot of
things, but he
continues to.
He was pushing what he wanted in his overall story, which I understand.
Right.
And the thing is, his overall thought wasn't what us as fans wanted in the end to continue that saga or that story, or to figure out what that story was before we got to episode four.
I think if you wrote it on a piece of paper, it would have been. But the execution was the problem.
Exactly.
Right. The details got lost, and I think that
the
that
details
was because
got
he
lost
left to his own devices.
Correct.
Yeah, and on top of that, he was dealing with a divorce. He had two daughters that he had to deal with, and I think he really wanted to make another mark in his life to make some sort of sense of his story that he had created. Because before then, he only had, two other movies to his name and his credit. THX 1138.
American Graffiti.
Mm. Oh, he did American Graffiti, too. Oh, I forgot about that. Jeez.
So,
but he tried to continue that because this was him to make a mark in the world. And I understand it from that circumstance and that feeling. He wanted to continue that saga to give to his kids, his grandchildren, everything else. And also,
in the end, he gave it to
complete
Disney, but
that story. Yeah, well, he did sell it to Disney, but we got Filoni and we got Favreau.
Both those guys deserve.
So
Christmas
presents. So that's our list of stuff that didn't work. Very quickly, the title Phantom Menace, the Nemonians, sounding Asian, Jar Jar Binks, the dialogue, the Gungans, Boss Nass, the Queen does not have a secret service. That bothered me. Why don't we see the citizens in Naboo in a panic or anything like that? We never got to see any of that. That didn't work. Especially after them talking about, or her talking about how much her people are dying. The decoy who sends, the queen to go, clean a droid. I would have fired the decoy going, you go do that. Yeah. Watto sounding Middle Eastern, or like you said, Italian or something like that. Young Anakin Skywalker, the way he was portrayed as just a happy little go-lucky kid. I mean, if he's a slave, he shouldn't be that happy-go-lucky. C-3PO's intro, midichlorians, Obi-Wan calling, Anakin a pathetic life form, reveal of Padme as a queen. I wish we didn't know that. I wish that was actually a surprise to us, too. We all knew it. Anakin guessing the flight controls. Again, another stupid scene. If he's a pilot, he should have known something. The Jedi's falling about, 10 stories high and still not getting hurt. Obi-Wan beating Maul, which, and then Naboo looks so untouched after the occupation. And, I said, if we all seen, the invasion of the Ukraine, it should have just looked like it was, torched.
Disaster.
Yeah. Qui-Gon getting burned so close to everybody else and not stinking up the place or smoke there. And of course, in the end, George Lucas, man, is like, he was his own worst enemy, even though he gave us something great. So, guys, there's a few unanswered questions in this movie.
Just a few.
A
couple.
I mean, but I'm going to touch upon a few. One, what happened to this Jedi super speed? It was, you see it once and never see it again.
All right. I'm a huge Force nerd, and one of my favorite things about the Star Wars universe is the Force, and anytime I play a game, I'm always a Sith sorcerer, some Sith Lord focusing on all these Force powers. And so it's so cool to me that like these Force powers exist.
Yeah.
For this super speed, accelerating through the Force, rushing through this corridor to happen one time in the entire cinematic evidence of the Star Wars universe.
Exactly.
Is unbelievable. And there's so many things that happen throughout Star Wars that we just get sprinkles of when it comes to the cinematic universe. And it's really crazy.
Yeah.
There's none of this in the
canon.
Well, in the original canon, it just doesn't exist.
Yeah, it does.
And the only time you see something like super speed or any of these Force things, say what you will about the sequel trilogy, we actually see more stuff, right?
Yeah.
We see catching blaster bolts and healing through the Force and different things, right?
Right.
But mind powers and stuff like that. But this super speed thing even still never came back.
No.
And the only time you can see it is like Jedi Knight Academy, like video games and like all these different like weird.
And it
like,
was a cool scene. Let me tell you, when we first saw it, that was our first indication that, hey, there's
yeah,
more
like,
to Force powers than anything else. And we saw them just all of a sudden they just turn into the Flash. Foof.
Yeah. And that's super cool.
Yeah. And I thought it was cool. And then it was like, oh, we should see more of that again. I'm still waiting.
We still haven't seen it, and except for video game applications, or and I don't know if this is even true, but maybe some literature, like it just doesn't exist.
So question here, another unanswered question, which, I mean, it's an unanswered question for me, and I don't know how you guys feel about it, but was Natalie Portman just a bad actor at the age that she was, or was it the part?
I think it was the part.
I don't have enough to say about Natalie Portman's acting outside of Star Wars, especially not before Phantom Menace, given her age and given my age at the time. But
honestly,
the only time I saw her was in Leon the Professional.
Exactly. Yeah. And she was very good for that
there.
At that time. She was amazing. I think it had to be what was written before her, and she was just doing everything accordingly.
Right. Well, and we talked about the digital elements before. One thing we didn't mention is when Natalie Portman was helping Jar Jar out of the turbine of the pod racer, and like the digital difficulty of like what that movie presented, she like pulled this inanimate object out of the turbine, which presumably was Jar Jar. And like even when she exits the scene, it seems so inorganic because she's just like not even sure where this digital rendering is going to be.
Right.
And so it's almost like someone's counting in the background. 1, 2, 3, exit. And it looks so rough.
It does.
And
that's
and
why part
of it
I think
rough.
It's so hard to work around this stuff. And I think, you know, I'm willing to give any of the actors the benefit of the doubt because I think, like, I love Ewan McGregor. I think that he's fantastic. We know Liam Neeson's incredible.
Right.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, there's all these, like, super high profile actors and that are in this film that just get shit on because of the content.
Right. No, and let me tell you, like, Natalie Portman, you know, fantastic
Amazing.
Actress.
Oh, yeah.
It's just, you know, of course, I know that she was young and I saw her in Leon the Professional. And I'm like, she was so good on that. So was that a one-time thing? Did she have to, you know, get better? I don't know. But, yeah, in the end, I think you're right. I think it was just the directing of her
and
character just didn't work.
Yeah. It felt like a B-list movie when it comes to how everything was put together.
Right.
If you look at the Clone Wars, too, when she's in that particular movie, too.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, the Attack of the Clones? Attack of the Clones is a whole different conversation.
Oh, my God.
I almost can't sit through that.
The next
it's
time
so
we talk about that, the amount of stuff that's wrong with that movie is just going to be insane.
That's a roast fest. There's no conversation.
And her running.
There.
Yeah. So,
you know,
we get a glimpse of Aurra Sing during the pod race, and it's teased, and we never see her. We see her in comic books. We see her in the Clone Wars cartoons, but... Man, what a cool character. Here's what I say. For people who only watch the movies, right? And they're not like, hey, I got to go see the Clone Wars. It was such a tease for nothing because you're like, ooh, what character is that? What is that going to happen? And then nothing. I mean, I keep wondering, was she going to be used in one of the movies?
Star Wars, man. Star Wars. This is what they do, though. Like, this still happens. Like, we've seen Bosk. One of the Trandoshan bounty hunters we've seen. In fact, in I think it was Empire Strikes Back, when all the bounty hunters line up, and like he specifically tells Boba Fett no disintegrations. Like there's that one glimpse of like all these super high profile bounty hunters who are all named, as far as I know.
Yep.
That are really cool, like Bosk, one of the Trandoshan like lizard dudes. And for
IG-88.
Yeah. Assassin droids and all that things like that. And for those who have for some reason listened to us talk this long, Aurra Sing is the woman in the orange with like the very, very pale skin and like the tall hair that you see a glimpse of. It was right after the pod race?
During the pod race. Yep. She was
during
looking
the pod
at
race. And she, if I heavily encourage anyone listening to check out the Clone Wars because it's just fantastic. But. She's a really badass character.
Yeah. No, exactly.
It's just one example of Star Wars going, ha, check it out, and then just never revisiting it, or like,
yeah,
not having clear plans to revisit. And I think George Lucas just goes into this huge, like, ADD, like, I have so many cool ideas, and I just shit them out onto a piece of paper and hand them to you, because, like, he's great at creating these amazing characters and stories, but, like,
yeah,
the order that they present themselves in just don't make any fucking sense.
Yeah. So, guys, sorry, Shmi Skywalker, good mother or bad mother? Because, let's be honest, she gives up her son to a stranger she just met, especially after putting him in danger in a pod race.
Unbelievable mother.
I'm still going with the Lady Magdalene aspect about that.
The Jesus Christ Skywalker? Shmi.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's... It's very strange, and I think this is all part of the disbelief of the suspension of disbelief that the slavery situation comes up with too.
I think she had one drunken night and she spent it with Emperor Palpatine or Governor Palpatine.
Probably, and didn't want to say a word.
She
or
didn't
something.
Remember, and he kind of filled her with all the midichlorians, and yeah, that's what happened.
Yeah, but besides all that, let's say that yes, he was
behaviorally.
He was immaculate.
What the hell's going on? Yeah,
he was immaculate conception.
I don't think
whatever. I mean, would a mother just give up their son to a stranger like that? It's like, hey, that's like, you know, I don't know, somebody coming into my house or my...
I think it she realized at that point, it's like, oh, crap, I got to get rid of this kid.
Yeah, I think that it would have been so much more believable if we actually had the appearance of some sort of hardship, and we didn't.
Yeah, exactly.
We had like a suburban household made out of stucco. With like a droid and a race car and like a table for six, and like we had all these like very suburban, like very middle class fucking amenities, and like there was no actual strife. In fact, I don't even know what the fuck she does as a slave. I think her job as a slave is to be Anakin's mom while Anakin works part time at Radio Shack. Like, I don't really get I don't understand what the hell's going on.
Is Shmi a masseur?
I know.
I don't know. She's a get pregnant and birth Anakin or
exactly.
As near as
right?
I can tell.
Oh my god!
And hold on. You have to go to Governor Palpatine. Why? You have to give him a massage. Is there a happy ending? Maybe.
Well, I mean, that would be a better explanation than we have. And I think that the bottom line is if this was like even remotely a tale of strife and a real tale, a believable tale of woe about the slavery and corruption of Tatooine. And like the fact that we found this kid in a situation of the slums instead of this like Sahara luxury resort or wherever the hell that we're supposed to be. Like, I think that would have been a more believable situation. I think that truly would have been a mother finding the best situation for her son. But what was conveyed was not that.
No, it wasn't.
Oh, yeah, I'm super bought in on this weird space wizard telling me my kid has powers for some reason.
Yeah, exactly.
And have fun, kid. See you in hell.
Talking about like the chosen one. So here's talking about the chosen one. Here's another one. So why didn't they go deeper into this prophecy of the chosen one? And I feel like they didn't do that in all three movies. As a matter of fact, at one point, I think, what was it? Mace Windu actually says, maybe we misread the whole chosen one thing.
Yeah.
So they never touched.
I think Yoda says maybe we a prophecy misread that one.
Right. It was Yoda, not Mace Windu. But yeah, it was just so. I'm like.
It was kind of overlooked.
It was so overlooked. Yeah. It's like, oh, the chosen one. Well, why is he the chosen one? Well, it makes him. Yeah. What does the prophecy say? Nothing.
Yeah. I would have loved to see a napkin with just the scribblings of what the prophecy was to even
the
like
the actual contract.
Well, I'm going to make another racy comment to go along with the Scientology comment. It's like with religion, there's a Bible, man. Like there's some sort of doctrine or some sort of like rule book or some sort of
exactly.
thing, like a textbook to reference. And it's like we still don't have the ability to form our own opinion about what the fuck the prophecy is.
Yeah.
We have no clue.
That is true.
We don't know what it is. We don't know what it says. Like, we can't even say, oh, like, maybe it was Anakin, maybe it was Obi-Wan, maybe it was Luke. Like, there's a bunch of, maybe it was
there's Rey, a whole bunch of know? Other things out there that says that, you know, the person will bring balance to the Force. They think it's Luke, they think it's I mean there's just all kinds of stuff out there,
but like the person who brought balance to the Force can mean a lot of things, because doesn't balance mean equality? And how is two Sith versus 10,000 Jedi equality?
It's all speculation. And what was it in Rogue One that they had? What was it? That one blind guy was talking about.
Oh, yeah, the Force-sensitive martial artist Jedi that was blind.
Yeah, he was talking about something of the guilds or something like that.
Well, he was, what is it, something of the wills or something.
Yeah.
And, yeah, well.
Well,
Obi-Wan gave...
We'll get to that. So, George, send us some feedback and let us know. Mr. Lucas, let us know.
Yeah, please let me know.
We need help, man. And we love you desperately. Yeah. This is a friendly game 23 years after the fact of us just trying to deconstruct it together, man.
Exactly.
Have your people call our people. So, Obi-Wan gave in to anger when Qui-Gon got killed. I mean, they're taught not to, you know, give in to anger and stuff like that. But you would think, because you saw it in his eyes, like when he was behind that ratio, he just had deep rage in him. You would think, don't you think they should touch upon this whole thing that he did probably, you know, touch upon the dark side? That never came up.
To some degree. A little bit.
Yeah, never came up.
I think that the bottom line is that, and part of the dogma of the Jedi truly is that it's that simple. And I don't think it is.
No.
And I think that if you look at the expanded universe, and this is where, like, people are going to be, like, falling asleep, because, like, it's just, like, in the expanded universe, Luke is actually known to have mastered both. So is Mace Windu.
Yeah.
Mace Windu fights with a specific style called Vapod, which is, like, this super, like, in the weeds, like... He harnesses the dark side to be more powerful.
Right.
And like he's not tempted by it. And I think that there's a certain level where dark side's temptation is the part that truly makes you evil. And if you fall in and you embrace the dark side rather than utilizing it, you become something you don't want to be. But I think with the Jedi, because the Jedi fear what they can't control, I think that they fear the dark side, and they don't allow anyone to even get anywhere remotely close to it. But I think that as humans and as people, like, there's no such thing as being all light. You know, like, we all have temptation. We all have situations that make us do things we don't want to do, or like that don't define us, or we're not proud of. Right.
Right.
And I think that that's a token piece of what makes Anakin and Obi-Wan fantastic Jedi.
And this is when we go back to you know, how the Jedi became so indoctrinated into, like, their own beliefs and their own, you know, their own way of doing things, that's why, you know, they failed miserably. It's because they couldn't recognize that, hey, as a human, you're going to have all these type of feelings. It's how you control them and how you deal with them every day in life. But yeah, so it's a very interesting, you know, it's always been interesting to me that he gave into so much anger, but they never touched upon the fact that, hey, did he touch upon the dark side? They just kind of let that go. It's like, nah, he got angry, you know, and that was it.
And I think that, and again, to steal the segue, I think that this comes down into the whole, like, why are we training Anakin?
Exactly.
Thing. And so, like, when it comes to... I think that one of the reasons they were so afraid of training Anakin is that they saw such power in him, and they weren't able to control the indoctrination of being a Jedi, because I think that ultimately that's why they're concerned about being too old. It's like, we aren't able to brainwash you to become a Jedi, right? We're not able to a certain degree, we're not able to brainwash you into the dogma of the Jedi Order, not even to the light side of the Force, forget all that. But, like, it's almost like being born into like, North Korea, or, like, you know, some sort of closed-off society. It's like, we're not going to allow you to form an opinion. Because if we train you to be this crazy, powerful Force user, and we're afraid of your potential, if you break from our dogma and our ideology, you're going to be our enemy, and you're going to fuck us up. And so I think that it's an interesting comment. Like, you know, they're so hesitant to train Anakin because it's like they could be training one of the most powerful Sith Lords there ever was. And lo and behold, that's exactly what they did. but it's like,
right,
they,
but what
they
I'm
had
saying,
to take a stab at it.
Right, but what I'm saying is, so if, because look, even Obi-Wan was like, the kid is dangerous. He said it just like that. The kid is dangerous.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people thought it was only Qui-Gon the one that's saying, no, we should train him, right? My thought was, if they were going to do something, you know, in this movie, I would have done it where the Jedi Council would have been like, yes, he's the chosen one. Let's train him. And Obi-Wan should have been just reluctant all the way through saying, I do not think we should train this guy. And then he's, you know, and they force it upon him to train him. And he's forced to train him.
Yeah, I mean, that's Qui-Gon's dying wish, right? And that's
yeah, but
tricky,
he went from
right?
this guy's dangerous to, hey, I'm just going to train him because Qui-Gon told me to train him. You know,
yeah, I think there's a bit of loyalty that goes into that too. But I agree that even then, I would, if I were Obi-Wan, I'd be like, I don't know, man.
Yeah, exactly. So tell me, and it's talking about Anakin. Towards the end of the movie, I mean, when in the celebration, he had a braid already. You know, the Jedi braid already grew out or something.
Yeah.
I'm like,
he had his Padawan braid.
How long?
I think it's a weave.
Yeah. Is it? I mean, that's what I'm wondering. Is like, is it a Jedi weave or something until he grows into it? But
I don't
know.
It
was very quick.
It would be weird to celebrate.
It was too quick.
It was too quick.
Yeah.
I don't think his hair was that
I mean,
long.
Was this celebration like months and months later? Because guess what? Naboo wasn't touched. So it's not like they needed to rebuild.
Or was it like a year later?
Fine.
It was what?
All they did was
a year later.
It was a year
Maybe
later?
It was the anniversary.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a thought. I think that's one of those visual just attention to details thing that we wanted to represent him as a Padawan, and we just ended up throwing it together a little too quick.
Right, right.
Like here's your braid.
So before we get into the actors, you know, the actors part, I just want to get to some quick plot holes here. Better tech in the prequels than in the originals?
Well, so I didn't actually talk about this with you before we did the podcast, but you guys have heard of the Soviet Union, especially what's going on now. I almost think, and times where you have governmental bodies in control of populace, like if you look at North Korea, you look at the Soviet, even like Eastern Germany, Eastern Europe, and the Soviet Republic, if you look at some of the technology they were using in times of that oppression, like, it's vastly different than what the rest of the world was using. And I wonder, and I doubt, let's not give anyone too much credit here, but I wonder if we look at it from a benefit of a doubt standpoint like that, like, it would make sense that when you're under this control of this crazy empire, that technological resources aren't being allocated. You can't go down to Best Buy and buy yourself an iPad Pro because they've nuked all the Best Buys. Now you've got a Circuit City full of VCRs. And you just have to fucking deal with it. I'm just thinking, like, you know, if you look at, like, Soviet automobiles or radios, you know what I mean? Are you guys tracking with me here? It's like, there's a
big gap. I understand
what
you're saying. Listen,
as a
person that went to Russia himself one time to Moscow, I understand what you're saying when it comes to that, because I remember when going.
Do I think it was on purpose? No. But I think that's a fun way of making it work.
Yeah.
I have a different idea. All
go ahead, Mark.
That my thought is with where we're at now within the prequels, they're at their highest point, and we're starting to see. Okay, they had the highest tech, so they had all that information, all that tech at their hands. Yes, right. But by the time we get to episode 4. Which is A New Hope, everything is old, outdated, because the Empire didn't want them to proactively do more. They didn't prosper more with the technology. So I think that's what we get by the time we get to, what was it, episode 7 or 8 at that point, when we saw it on the Vegas kind of...
Canto Bight.
Forgot all about that. That's a whole different conversation.
They're pretty much reutilizing everything that they have and kind of fixing all the jalopies that they have.
Yeah. Within that time. That's a good point. I think that you know, even with the New Republic, as you go into the, I know this is not answering the question at all anymore, but as you go into the sequels, it's like they're still catching back up. And I think that the Empire was this vast thing. And again, it doesn't excuse that I don't think Rob intended to open up this can of worms, but I think that it's I think it's more of a question of, hey, like, well, this prequel happened, you know, 30 years before the Battle of Endor. What the hell happened with all the technology?
Right.
I think to something you mentioned earlier, Mark, which is by the time we're in the Empire phase, like if you look at the Rebel Alliance, like X-Wings are basically like a hot rodded 1970 Dodge Chargers with guns.
Exactly.
Like they're nothing cutting edge. Like TIE Fighters are these crazy, super nimble, Raiden Zero, like wild fighters. Like they're so much more capable. But because we have the power of the Force and the power of the Rebel Alliance on our side, we're going to take these, you know, musket rifles and conquer the British.
Right.
It's like, it's this weird emotional kind of thing. But
well, listen, in the end, we know that it, just like any movie that we have seen that has touched upon the past, a good example of that is like, let's say, Star Trek, right? So the original Star Trek series, and that was supposed to be the future. But yet, when we go back nowadays to, you know, like, a sequel of that or whatever it is, the technology on that looks so much better than, of course, the original show did. And that's a product of just, you know, production
Hollywood,
design and Hollywood, because they know that, hey, if we design this this set to look exactly like the old one, we're not going to get any viewers or anything like that. But and I understand that.
Yeah.
I completely understand. Hell, even the new show right now, To Boldly Go or something like that, it's on Paramount. And it's about the Christopher Pike as the captain with the Enterprise. And when you look at the Enterprise, it still looks gorgeous inside. And that's supposed to be the original Enterprise. So I find it funny where, you know, the change, the production change is because of the times. But yeah, I also agree. You know, it's like, if I wish there was a little more of a story behind that. But it's just like you were saying, you know, when you watch other countries that have been, you know, that pretty much have a different type of government or something like that, and they don't let, you know, they try to do everything themselves, or they don't have
it. It might be a little nitpicky.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So here's a question, and this is something I asked before. So why did the Sith need to take revenge? For what?
I could write you a doctorate dissertation.
Okay, no. We're talking about
what relevance has the cinematic Star Wars universe created to taking revenge?
Correct.
The answer is none. We have no, and this is my criticism. I think I was talking to you earlier, Rob, about the prologue, right? So like the yellow text in the beginning of the movies. In this movie, all we did was sum up where we are. We didn't sum up why we're here. We didn't sum up what the Sith are and what the Sith represent. Like even in the original trilogy, like I don't even know if they use the word Sith. Right?
Right.
And so it's like we have no actual relevance as to what the Sith are. And I think that there's one thing we can say real quick, and I know that we're crunching here, but like I think that there's some level of understanding because of the expanded universe books and the expanded universe content that happened after Return of the Jedi,
right?
That I think set people up to understand what the Sith were. But from a cinematic standpoint, as you know, John walking into the movie theater, there's absolutely no relevance. At last, we will take our revenge. This is just some asshole with red face paint running around killing people with a laser stick.
Right.
And we have no clue as to why it's happening. And, like, yes, we're getting to the point where we're creating this empire, but we have no clue as to why. Right?
What do you think, Mark? So.
Oh, honestly, the Sith, in my opinion, overall, has always been to take over the world.
In this case, the
universe. It's Nazi Germany. Yeah, basically Nazi Germany or Skeletor or whoever. Right. I have to take over the world.
Yeah.
It's just just that simple, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just I am bad guy, must kill. Like
la la la.
With the intricacies of the Nafkin prophecy and all these other things that happen in the Star Wars universe, there's just no pre-build as to what the hell the Sith are doing and why they're taking revenge. So even with that being said, like they're not taking revenge like on anything that we know about.
Right.
Like, they're just, yeah. Hey, soon we will win would be a better commentary than we will have our revenge. It's
right.
Like, what?
So, and as a matter of fact, some of the other plot holes that I was actually thinking we already touched upon. So we're going to go right into actors. And this is where the fantasy picks part of it comes in. So there's basically five major actors that I would say in this movie. There's Liam Neeson, Ian McGregor, mm-hmm. Natalie Portman, Jake Lloyd, and Ian McDiarmid. They got some great actors for this. Were they mm-hmm. the best actors for this movie? So would we change would we change an actor in for a character like Liam Neeson, or would we just leave that in there? Or was there somebody else that you think you would have portrayed it better?
Honestly, in my opinion, we could replace Liam Neeson.
Really? Who would you replace him with?
Oh, the one and only. That would be...
Please tell me not Bruce Campbell.
Not Bruce Campbell. No.
Are we sticking with time specific, or is this like a doing it today?
You know what? Let's do it today. Let's not be time specific, because then it.
No. I'm not. It's not time specific.
Qui-Gon could be as old as it needs to be. Really,
Chuck Norris.
Okay. Well, everybody, it's been a great podcast. I gotta go.
I'm gonna say Chuck Norris.
Chuck Norris.
As Qui-Gon.
Chuck Norris as Qui-Gon.
All right, so Jake Lloyd, I could easily replace with Haley Joel Osment, or...
Okay, that was in the running for me.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Really?
Depending on what era or time constraints. Everybody else
fuck,
is
you know
proper.
What? I like Jason, this guy, Gordon-Levitt. I really like that.
I'm cool with everybody. I think that Liam Neeson is a good choice. I mean, I don't know how we talked him into this movie in the first place. So,
let me tell you a little behind the scenes stuff. So Liam Neeson took this role without even reading the script.
God bless him. God bless him, dude.
Yeah, he did.
But like that being said, like I really don't. I don't think he negatively contributed at all. I think Qui-Gon was pretty bulletproof. I think with the time that he had on screen, I don't really have anything negative to say about Qui-Gon's part.
Well, I mean, it's not Qui-Gon itself, but I mean, like, if you could, you know,
yeah,
who else would you put in there?
I can't imagine a different Qui-Gon at this point, in the same way that I can't imagine a different Ewan McGregor Obi-Wan. Ewan McGregor has earned his place to be Obi-Wan.
I do agree.
And like, it really couldn't be different to me. Like, I don't know how I would see anything different. Natalie Portman, I could take or leave. I think
really
with the part, like, I think she did great. I think she did just fine. But like, I could take or leave her as Padme. But I think at this point, it's like, it's another one of those things where it's just ingrained in my brain. That she is.
Would
Padme.
You use her alternate counterpart?
What do you mean?
Who is her? Who is
that? Kira?
Natalie Portman's stand-in.
Is that Kira?
Yeah, Keira Knightley.
I didn't realize that until you mentioned that on this podcast. But
Kira could actually do that. I think she could actually portray it properly.
I really.
But the thing is, I loved what Natalie Portman had to present, because she came from like kid royalty. You know, honestly, she was able to portray the character, and do everything that she needed to. Next up would be English Keira Knightley, and giving a true British accent to the character.
I still don't know why that needed to be there as far as the accent goes, but listen, I really like, I think Natalie Portman from that same standpoint, like she is Padme in my brain at this point. I don't necessarily think changing the actor in that role would be any different. The only actor that I think in my point of view that would have made me feel better, just knowing what I know now about Hayden Christensen, is I would have replaced Jake Lloyd. And if I were doing this today, one of the people that I had in my mind was Finn Wolfhard, best known for his role as Mike Wheeler.
Well, no, he wasn't alive then. I was going based upon at that time.
Oh, I get it. I'm just thinking anyone who could have portrayed a darker role, like it literally, like yeah. you can cast whoever. I think our pal from Home Alone that you mentioned, I forgot his name.
Haley. Macaulay Culkin.
No, Macaulay Culkin was in Home Alone. I'm talking Haley Joel Osment
from
what the hell?
Sixth Sense.
Jeez. Yeah, that's who I was talking about. My brain.
And Joseph Gordon-Levitt is from Third Rock from the Sun.
Right. Yeah,
a little older at that time, but could still play at least a four years younger.
And I think
play a better Anakin.
I think
in my opinion.
I think that's the ticket, right? Because it's not just about the cast. I think it's the age. And I think one of the hardest pills for me to swallow through this entire thing is the fact that we had to have a weird, like, not romantic yet, but like weird significance between Padme and Anakin in this movie.
And that conversation.
Yeah. They had this weird conversation about caring for one another, and it was just completely bizarre. And like, if they were remotely the same age, like that would have been a little different to me. And I feel like because Padme in this movie was supposed to be 14. And I think Natalie Portman in this movie was probably 17 or something.
Oh, yeah, she was.
and so, like, you know, she's almost a mature woman. And, like, there's this kid running around who looks like he's all but 8. And I think he's, like, 10, right?
Yeah, 10 or 12, yeah.
Right, but, like, he's, like, half her height. He's portrayed as this little tyke the entire time. And it just doesn't need
He doesn't
to
have
be
any
that
pubes
way
on his, you know, well, never regions
well,
or whatever.
Well,
yeah.
And like, to that point, like, they kept talking about how he wasn't old enough. And like, we see, and I was talking to Rob about this earlier, we see Luke Skywalker as a young man saying, oh, you're too old to begin the training. And like, in my mind, I'm like, yeah, oh, obviously. Okay, great. But like, in this one, it's like, he's like fucking 5. Like, what do you mean he's too old to begin the training? Like, he's not training to use the bathroom and the toilet. He's training to be a Jedi Knight, man. Right. Like, give him a break.
Yeah, but
yeah,
and
exactly.
So like, that stuffiness, like, I don't even understand. And so like, if I were to make any cast difference, like cast changes, it would just be making the Anakin a little bit older. To be more in line with what Padme's age was.
I agree with you. Like, him being a little bit older with, like, you know, being in the Weeblos instead of the Cub Scouts. And then going into the Boy Scouts and actually, hey, hold on, I got pubes. What the hell do I do with this?
I don't know what Mark's thing with pubes is right now, but the bottom line is like, I'm with you in that, like,
it's a growing thing. It's literally just growing up.
It didn't need to be this like, we had like a 10-year gap between episodes 1 and 2.
Yeah.
From a maturity standpoint. Like, fuck, why didn't we use Hayden Christensen?
Well, remember, like, remember that he wasn't found. Like, you got to remember when they did the whole cast tours.
I get it.
They went after thousands of kids, and he was the cutest little kid that had better personality than even the runner up. I remember seeing a documentary on that, and the runner up just felt like stale paper. And all of a sudden, just, you know, Jake Lloyd just had a lot of personality, and I guess that's what he wanted. But
And that's tough, right? And it's hard to cast, especially at that time. But like, for me, if I just did a fantasy pick, like, I would have loved to have pulled Hayden Christensen out of middle school and said, hey fucker, you're playing Anakin, and he'll be like, what? I'm playing what? And then I'm like, just get in the van.
Like, and don't do that movie Looper.
Get in the van. Wow.
Just get in the van, man. You're playing Anakin. Who the fuck's Anakin? You'll find out on the way, but that's what you're doing.
That would
because
been
like
great.
At that point, like, we would have had continuity. He probably would have been the right age,
probably.
Like,
I mean,
think by the time he's in Attack of the Clones, he's like 24 or something when it comes to like the actor's age,
right?
So it's just it's very strange.
My choices. That's my only I think comment. My choices. I think I don't know about Liam Neeson. I don't know. Maybe I would have left him in. Ian McGregor, of course, iconic as he is now, but believe it or not, the casting choice for him at one point was Kenneth Branagh as Obi-Wan.
Kenneth Branagh, really?
Yeah, because Kenneth Branagh, there was a lot of fan casting at the time, and somebody actually did a painting of Kenneth Branagh in a Jedi robe, and it looked almost like Alec Guinness, like a young Alec Guinness. And we're like, holy shit, okay. I could see that.
Not to correct you, but Kenneth Branagh.
Braga.
Braga?
Yeah.
It's Branna.
No, no.
From...
Oh, Branna. I'm sorry. Yeah, you're right. Kenneth Branna. I'm sorry. Yeah, I said Branna. It the wrong way. My apologies on that. Yeah. So, yeah, Kenneth Branna was, at some point, like, people thought that he had the Alec Guinness...
He had the reddish hair.
He looks like Ewan McGregor, too.
Like, yeah, he does look like right. Ewan McGregor.
But they thought that he looked, what is it? He had that, because whenever you hear, you know, Kenneth talk, he was very, like, almost Alec Guinness like.
He had that theater succinct attitude.
Correct.
The way he presented his words, very theater-esque. And that's what I always loved of Kenneth Branagh. Yeah. And you see that, and he's done a lot of Shakespearean movies.
Correct.
As well. And he's directed, been in them, and he's amazing.
Yeah.
And I could see that too, just the same.
So I thought
I think that would have been a good choice too.
Yeah.
In but terms I think he would have been a little too old.
Instead of Natalie Portman's job, I mean, if we're talking about, like, maybe not even, you know, actors at that time,
mm-hmm.
you know, but like any actor, even now, the this girl, her name is Carmen Bicondova. She played Selina Kyle in Gotham.
Ooh,
I think she would have been a very beautiful queen type.
Like if we did it now?
Yeah. I think she would have been gorgeous. I mean,
the Selina Kyle in the Gotham show. Yeah. No,
I could see that.
I think that would have been a better pairing than the Anakin we had too. Like if it all happened at the same time, I think that would have made more sense.
Right.
Because she's a lot more adolescent, but she's still got that air to her.
Yeah.
She's got that sort of
meet her actually at a con, and she is
queenly kind of feel.
Amazing.
Yeah.
She's just an amazing personality, as well as what she had gave us within the Gotham TV series.
Yeah. I think she would have been, like, if we were making it now, I think she would have been great. And just to do a future casting instead of doing Christian Haydenson, I would have done Timothée Chalamet for Anakin Skywalker, the older, because when you see him in Dune, Basically, he is actually the Anakin Skywalker. I mean, so I could see him being that Anakin because he has that darkness in him. Also, he has, you know, that hero part of him, too. I don't know. That character he portrayed in Dune, what was the name of Atreides? What was the first name of it from Dune? You guys know the character of Dune that he portrayed. I love the movie, but I'm not a diehard fan of the book itself or how.
That's a huge universe that takes a lot longer than 2 hours to talk about.
Exactly.
Exactly.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
One other
Paul Atreides. That's who it is.
Oh, Paul. Yeah. What do you guys think about this? What about Maisie Williams for Padme?
I could see it, but Maisie.
Do you think she's too independent? Do you think she's too?
Like, she has that too meekish look to her as like a child.
Okay.
Mm.
You don't think she's quite like, I don't want to say quite pretty enough, but like quite like elegant, enough.
Childish.
Yeah, she's not
as much as I like Maisie. I loved her since Doctor Who, before she even got known on Game of Thrones. But the thing is, she has that kind of childish look.
Super kid,
And I can't really see her present. And I'm sorry, Maisie, if you're listening to this. But I loved everything that she had done in Game of Thrones. As well as there was an independent movie that came out about 2 years ago. And she was really good in those. But the thing is that she still presents as kind of that kind of smaller girl look.
Right. Not queenly.
I don't think that she could do the presence as what Natalie Portman had done. And it's not a discredit to Maisie at all. I think Maisie has her way of doing things, but as presence within the Star Wars medium, I think that they need somebody who is a little bit stronger, younger looking, but as well who could grow older. You know, if you understand what
right,
I'm saying.
Right. Because right now, like, you know, it's funny. I'm looking at like the cast of Dune. And as I look at the cast of Dune, I'm like, you know what? Everybody there can kind of replace everybody in Phantom. So like, so well, let's say Timothy Chalamet as Anakin, Zendaya as Padme, older Padme,
yeah,
right?
You could do that. Definitely Zendaya as Padme. Definitely
Oscar Isaac maybe as Qui-Gon.
No, I would say Obi-Wan.
Yeah. Okay. Who would you put? Would you put like Jason Momoa as a Qui-Gon?
That we're getting a little, we're getting a little fucking crazy.
Definitely. But I know it's crazy. Can you imagine Jason Momoa?
I would say Jason Momoa as Qui-Gon. Definitely.
So there. Okay, so the title of this podcast is Phantom Menace. So I don't really want to get too far.
The title of this podcast is you're right. It's the
but
these are fantasy picks.
If
it was a fantasy pick for Star Wars, it would be Quinlan Vos for Jason Momoa. Quinlan Vos is a very rogue kind of running out in the woods sort of Jedi. And Clone Wars, he's depicted to have long hair and like have that whole like nature kind of stud vibe to him, and I think that would be perfect if we ever got that role in a cinematic play to be Jason Momoa. I don't think Jason Momoa has the tact to be a Qui-Gon Jinn when it comes to the Jedi Order. I don't think he has the polish. I think he's a fantastic like dude. I think from everything I've seen from him, like he's a he's a great actor. Right. He's got a great kind of
But Quinlan Vos only came out in one little scene, thing.
He's around as a character, but again,
he was a background character. Now imagine having that. Yeah. Right, I understand. Like imagine having all of a sudden you see like you know Jason Momoa as a background character. You're like, wait a minute, was that Jason Momoa? Please
tell me you're not gonna
do the Aura Sing bullshit to me.
Well, but like Qui-Gon, like in the grand scheme of things, isn't that major of a character either?
No,
like,
that's true. But I will say this:
he shows up in a glimmer of Star Wars.
I will say this: if Jason Momoa was Qui-Gon Jinn, whenever he would be in front of the Jedi Council would be terrified of Jason Momoa. They would have said to him, "Yo, dude, do whatever you want with Anakin. We don't care, man."
I mean, yeah.
I don't
agree,
fuck with
but
this
like,
guy.
Then we also have Samuel L. Jackson on the Jedi Council. It's like, I feel like the Jedi Council was so stuffy that it suspended disbelief, right? We're talking about space wizards. We're not talking about a bunch of dudes in a room. Because if it's dudes in a room, I'm definitely going on Team Jason Momoa, right? But like, we got a little green guy that's throwing fucking Senate booths at people. Like, I don't know. I don't know if we really want to be.
Who do you think
sizing up green dudes?
Who do you think Dave Bautista could play?
Huh.
Wouldn't that be interesting? Like you know, like having Dave Bautista in. Would he have been?
I would cast him as like Darth Bane. Like if we ever got like a Darth Bane movie, like that would be the guy. Like big. The problem is he's so charming. Right, he's such a charming actor with his role in Guardians of the Galaxy. He's so
I'm gonna go to the extreme opposite. I'm gonna go somewhere really different and very strange. Who is the head of the Gungans?
Boss Nass. Could you imagine?
I mean, fucking Dwayne Johnson. Like it'd be the same conversation.
Yeah,
it's some big dude. Yeah, rather than a robot on a computer, like having
Misa think you could do this.
Oh man,
I think Dave Bautista would have been a good Mace Windu.
Okay, as an alternative,
pick. But you know who I think would have been great as the because of the way he was portrayed in Dune, Stellan Skarsgård, the guy who was what is it? The Harkonnen, the bald guy that was like you know bathing in oil.
Yeah.
Are you trying to tell me that isn't Dave Bautista?
No, Dave Bautista was. Just, but then you know I would have seen him as the emperor. You know, like an emperor wannabe. Like that character itself, Harkonnen was even more fucked up, I think, than the
Yeah, it was. And then I know we didn't really talk about Ian McDiarmid, but I really think that he's I think
he can change that character.
Oh no, you can't.
He's a great emperor. He's a great Palpatine. I think he plays the role flawlessly.
Oh, of course. No, like I said, this is just a fantasy cast in the sense of like, all right, let's just fantasy. You know, as a matter of fact, you guys realize, again, another little behind the scene type of thing, that Ian McDiarmid was never told that he was going to play Palpatine. When he got hired, they told him on the day of filming, oh, by the way, you are playing what you played before. I was like, wait, get out of here.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, so Rebecca Ferguson, I think I would have put her as Shmi Skywalker.
Oh, okay.
Like I said, I would take all of Dune. Javier Bardem, who would we put? Yoda.
We're so far in the weeds on the rest of the cast. I don't know. I don't even have like an opinion. You know, it's tough. Like I don't have the acumen around like the different actors and actresses' names that you guys do. Even like,
right.
I don't know. I think the bottom line is that my biggest feedback is just the age of Anakin, and just the carefree Anakin, and like I think that joins it together is like the big criticism is like, A, I don't buy the strife of Tatooine. I don't buy the romance or the interest in Anakin from Padme. I don't buy any of that stuff. And like that's the stuff that I would want to have addressed however we address it.
Well, the last part I would say maybe Pedro Pascal as Qui-Gon.
Oh shit. I would sign up for that.
Yeah, I would too. Damn, that was good, man.
Yeah, that's
really good.
That's a good one. I mean, it wouldn't work now, but I think that that'd be a weird conversation.
Yeah,
Force-sensitive Mandalorians are pretty fucking dangerous.
I mean, listen. In any kind of way, you know, it's always fun to try to see not only recasting probably these parts, but also, you know, what would we do in the movie, you know, if we had to change things. And that's exactly what, you know, that's why this podcast exists. It's just our fantasy picks as fans, because we're not filmmakers.
No.
Because how many times have we gone out there and seen a movie, and when we're walking out of the movie, the first thing we go is like, you know who would have been good at that part? Or you know what they should have done? And that's exactly what we're doing here. It's just the fact that we're doing that. But
it's fun to pick.
Yeah. No, so that's actually our show for today. Definitely, I had a lot of fun here. I want to thank Zach for coming on. And Zach, you did a phenomenal job today. Thanks, I really appreciate it. And I hope to see you back here in the future. And definitely want to thank you, Mark, for coming on.
No problem.
Where can we find you?
You can find me on Panels of Pixels podcast, and we can be found on the Next Level Online Radio Podcast Network. And there we do adaptations of comics, you know, basically adapted from comics to TV, movie, anime, anything. We kind of finished up Moon Knight. We're going to do you know, Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. You could also find me on Adrenaline Cinema Podcast, which is on the Pirate Corps Entertainment Network as well. And therein, we cover anything that's action, adventure, thriller, suspense, all those cool movies that get your adrenaline going. So the next movie that you'll get to see or listen to us talk about will be Army of Darkness. And then after that, we'll be talking about Uncharted that you were on,
right,
Robert. So after that, you know, and then on top of that, well, I have to actually initiate and state that Fantasy Picks Movie Edition is on the Pirate Corps Entertainment Network. So you could just check us out on the Pirate Corps Entertainment Network. .com.
Absolutely.
And
yeah, so
see everything.
Yeah, like Mark was saying, we're now part of that network. You can find also, if you just want to find, you know, Fantasy Picks Movie Edition on Facebook, Fantasy Picks Movie Edition on Twitter, Fantasy at Fantasy Picks Me. Instagram, Fantasy Picks Movie Edition. Email us at fantasypicksmovieedition@gmail.com. Love to hear from you guys. What do you guys think about this episode? You know, any suggestions you may have, any way that we can improve on what you want to hear, or, you know, topics, you know, or movies that you want us to cover. And also, you know, you can always catch us on the most popular podcast apps out there: Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or whatever podcast player of your choice you use. And if a rating is available, definitely leave us a rating. But yeah, so I definitely, once again, man, I want to thank you guys. I want to thank everybody for, you know, tuning in. And hopefully we will cover the next Star Wars one. That'll be later down the line, but I'm sure it's going to be a long one too.
And I'm Zach Book. You can't find me anywhere other than my basement where I am right now. And I play guitar. And I like long walks on the beach and Star Wars. And
playing his guitar.
And I work for Best Buy, so
great. No, you don't. Oh, no, you don't.
All right, man. That's a good one, man. Have a week.
Love you. Bye.
Good night, everybody.